Good morning.
Good morning.
Our sermon today is entitled, How to Discuss Almost Anything. One of the hats that I wear around here this year, among others, is that of family ministries leader. And when I consider our families, what could benefit them, one of the things that comes to mind are skills for communication, especially when the communication gets tough. And that's what I would like to talk about today. There was a young Adventist couple. To look at them from the outside, you would think they were rather upstanding. They were quite the ideal of what you would expect in an Adventist couple. They were both born and raised as Adventists. They went to Adventist schools. They were leaders in their church. The husband was a youth leader. The wife helped out in Pathfinders. And everything looked like it was going well. But if you knew them well, you would recognize that they didn't handle conflict well. They had this habit of, on the one hand, either not handling the conflict, not having it, or on the other hand, when they did have it, it didn't go very well. They would either go to silence, or they would go to violence. Not that they were physically violent, but that their discussions were heated and derogatory to one another. And when they did have these discussions, it was damaging to their relationship. To illustrate a typical kind of conflict that they would have, on their wedding day, they exchanged wedding vows. And after the service, they exchanged wedding bands. A few years later, the young husband started to study the biblical concept of adornment, and he decided that in order to make sure there was no question about whether his life was in line with the biblical counsel or not, that it was time to stop wearing his wedding band. Well, the wife, on the other hand, had a different opinion. To her, the wedding band was a symbol that you say to the world, I'm married. It wasn't a piece of adornment or anything like that. It was a communication tool. Furthermore, she was a medical professional. And so when she went into the hospital and wrapped her arms around male patients to help them up out of bed, she didn't want to leave any question in their mind that her heart was spoken for. The husband knew this, and he didn't know how to have the conversation with her, but yet he wanted to do what his conscience was indicating that he should do. So one day, he just took his wedding band off. Now, as you can imagine, when the young wife noticed that he was no longer wearing his wedding band, she was upset, and she confronted him about it. So now that they were on the subject, well, he told her his mind, told her all the reasons why he thought that he shouldn't wear his wedding band. He told her vehemently, as if he couldn't have his opinion unless he convinced her of his opinion. Well, the discussion became so heated that finally she gave in, and she took her wedding band off and flung it into the woods. And then ran down the road crying. Okay? You see how this pattern of either silence or heated arguments, or almost violently heated arguments, that was the problem that they were dealing with. When I look around our church and I hear comments, I know that this young couple is not alone, that there are others who struggle with the same thing. And so today I wanted to talk about things to help deal with this kind of conflict. This young couple went to a Christian counselor for a year, and he gave them some tools to work with. And hundreds of hours since, they have practiced and studied negotiation, communication, and relationship skills. And I can confidently say that that young couple is much better off now because of it. They have the tools they need in order to deal with conflict. I know because I was that young husband. There is a better way to handle conflict. You don't have to leave a train of damaged hearts and broken people in the process. These ideas aren't new to me. If you look in the back of your handout, there's a handout in your bulletin. If you look on the back, it has books for additional study, and those books are where most of the ideas for this sermon have come from. I highly recommend taking a look at them, reading those, especially if you are in situations where conflict is a regular occurrence, which is most of us. Okay, there are two key behaviors. If we can change these two behaviors, we can drastically improve our relationships for the better. Those two key behaviors, number one, separate the people from the problem. And number two, negotiate based on the underlying interests. So when I say separate the people from the problem, what I'm saying is we need to get to the place where we have dialogue between people. There was a large hospital in the southwestern United States, and a lady went in to have a tonsillectomy. She came out with part of her right foot amputated. As tragic as that medical mistake was, the more tragic thing is when the investigators went in to figure out what had gone wrong, no less than seven people said they wondered why the doctor was operating on the foot instead of her tonsils, but they failed to speak up. This dialogue, getting to dialogue where we can have this free exchange of information between two or more people, is critical in dealing with conflict. So how do we get to the place where we can have dialogue? There are three skills that I want to share that help in this direction. And to emphasize the importance of dialogue here, Proverbs 15:22 says, "Without consultation, plans are frustrated, but with many counselors, they succeed." We can look at these other people that we are having conflict with as counselors. They're people with information that we need. We need to be able to make an environment where it's safe to share that information. And that's the first skill on the list. Make it safe. There are a few tips you can use to make it safe. Imagine a hypothetical example. The husband makes a comment likening their children to dogs. Well, this flies all over the wife, and she confronts him about it, says, "I heard you compare our children to dogs." The husband has a few options now. He hears in the tone of his wife's voice that she's rather upset about this. So the first thing he can do is actively listen. Before he makes a statement about, you know, his ideas, he can make sure that he's heard her out. People will not listen to you until they know that you have heard them, or it'll be very hard for them to listen to you unless they know that you've heard them. So you can actively listen. It may sound something like this. The husband would say to his wife, "So you're concerned about the disrespect in this comment." And then she can repeat back or take it a step further if she needs to and clarify even more. "Yes, I'm not only concerned about the disrespect, but I'm concerned about the alienation between us, the distance in our relationship because of the disrespect shown to our kids." So then he can say, "So it's not just about our kids, it's also about a relationship, you know, distance between us." She says, "Yes, that's it." So once she knows that he's heard her, then he's in a position to be able to speak to her and get his point across. He may have made a mistake. Okay? If he made a mistake, the next thing on the list is apologize if appropriate. If you really have made a mistake, the husband could say something like, "Boy, honey, I blew it. Thank you for bringing this to my attention. I'm going to go right now and apologize to the kids. The second thing he could do is contrast to fix the misunderstanding. Maybe he made that comment, but the wife misunderstood. So first, if you're going to contrast, you say what you don't mean, then you say what you do mean. So he could say, honey, I'm sorry. I did not intend to be disrespectful to our kids. What I did intend was to tell how endearing our kids are to me, because when I was a kid, we had this little puppy, and he was so cute, and I loved him dearly. And to me, our kids are like extra special pets. So by contrasting, he can help fix the misunderstanding. And that's something we can use too. The last thing is to establish a mutual purpose. By establishing a mutual purpose, you become members of a team working to solve the problem rather than enemies going head to head. So it might sound like this for the husband and who's talking with his wife. We are both interested in having a very respectful environment here at home, and I am committed to do whatever it takes, not only to maintain that environment, but to make it even better. So now they're a team. Both of them are interested in this respectful environment. Okay, so that's the first skill. Make it safe so that this helps separate the people from the problem. The second skill to separate the people from the problem is to master my story. We tend to move very quickly from seeing the facts to telling ourselves a story about the facts to having emotions based on that, and then we oftentimes act out something based on those emotions. If we can get back to the facts and tell ourselves a more benign story, it'll give us the opportunity to take on the conflict before our emotions run away with us. And I'll give an illustration of that in a minute. The second thing we can do in mastering my story is separate fact from the story. Okay, so we retrace our path to action, then we separate the facts from the story. The third thing, watch out for three types of stories in particular: victim, villain, and helpless stories. The victim stories say, it's not my fault. The villain stories say, he's such a devil. The helpless stories say, there's nothing I can do about it. Okay, those three stories will land you in a lot of trouble. To illustrate this, and the fourth point here is, tell the rest of the story. There was one time I was working in lawn care. We had a daycare that we took care of, and out behind the daycare was this playground filled with wood chips. And once a year or so, the wood chips needed to be refreshed. We got a dump truck load of wood chips, came and parked it out in front of the daycare there. But the only way to get back to the playground was through a little gate wide enough for a wheelbarrow to get through. It certainly wasn't wide enough for a dump truck to get back there. So we would have to take the wood chips, put them in the wheelbarrows, and wheel it all the way around the building, down the side, out to the back, to where we could dump it on the playground. A whole playground full of that, that would have taken a long time. So my boss went next door to the store and asked the clerk, would it be okay if we move our truck around behind your store? There's a parking lot back there, and there's a gate going through to the playground right back there through the fence, and it would be a whole lot easier for us to move these wood chips in that way and take a lot less time. The clerk said, well, I don't know, let me call the owner. So he tried to call the owner, couldn't get a hold of him, but he said, hey, I'm sure it's okay, the guy's a great guy, just go ahead and move your truck back there and take care of what you need to. So we moved it around and parked it back there, got about two-thirds of the truck unloaded, and the owner pulls up. Well, can you imagine from the owner's perspective? He pulls up behind his store, he looks out, and here's a strange truck sitting back there. They're unloading wood chips, leaving a big pile right behind the bed of the truck. They're wheeling it across out over here. these strangers are, in his mind, taking advantage of him. And so he slams on the brakes, leaps out of his car, comes over, red in the face, shouting at us, "Get off my property! I'm tired of being taken advantage of." I was so taken aback. I didn't know what to do. I was ready to hop out of the truck right then and drive away. My boss handled it a little better. He handled it very calmly and respectfully. He gave the guy the background information, and then he asked the guy's permission. He said, "Hey, would it be okay if we finish unloading? We just have a little bit more in the truck." And the guy, now that he had all the information, the true facts, said, "Oh, yeah, I suppose that'd be okay." So he did a 180 turn after he got the right facts. So he'd seen the facts. There's this truck, the strangers, wood chips on the ground, told himself a story. Here are these villains taking advantage of me. Then felt angry because of it and acted in a way that was rather inappropriate because of the story that he had told himself. We can improve our way of handling things like this if we can get back to the basic facts and tell ourselves a better story. The third skill for separating the people from the problem is to state my path. State is an acronym. S stands for share my facts. T is for tell my story. A is ask for others' paths. Those are the first three, and that's the method that you use. The last two are the manner in which you talk. The second T is for talk tentatively. And the E is for encourage testing. I tried this out on a coworker not too long ago. We had a new guy that started. His name was Edgar. And Edgar came to work the first day in a tie. Well, you got to understand my work environment. We're very casual there. Almost everybody wears jeans. Even the vice president of research and development wears jeans on occasion. And that's how relaxed it is. So Edgar comes to work in a tie. He comes to work in a tie for the first week. He's actually still wearing a tie. Well, we were sitting in a meeting with 8 or 10 of us there, and about 3/4 of the way through the meeting, one of the buyers comes down. He needed to share some information, shared what he needed to, got up, and as he was walking out the door, turned around and pointed at Edgar, said, "Lose that ugly tie." And he didn't say it so nicely. Well, he closed the door and walked off. And the rest of us are looking at one another. It's like, oh no, poor Edgar. I mean, what's he going to think? He's been 2 weeks on the job and he's getting cussed out in front of his coworkers because of his outfit. You know, a number of people in the room kind of, you know, tried to make some comments to smooth it over and not leave Edgar with this feeling that he's unwelcomed. Right. So I was troubled about this. And I didn't want to let it just slide. So after the meeting, I went back to my computer and sent an instant message to this buyer and said, "Hey, I heard you use an expletive to describe Edgar's outfit. So that was share my facts." Okay. Then I told my story. This makes me wonder if Edgar was embarrassed. He's been 2 weeks on the job, and you know, I'm concerned that this could be a bad reputation we're going to get if this is the way our new employees are treated. So let's tell my story. Then I asked for his path. I asked him, I said, "Maybe you intended this comment in humor and it just didn't come across like you intended." And you can see in the method too, I talked tentatively. I said, "This makes me feel like Edgar might be," so rather than "Edgar felt embarrassed," "This makes me feel like Edgar might be embarrassed." And then I encouraged the testing. I asked, I actually primed, I said, "Hey, I gave the guy a way out. You know, did you intend this in humor? But maybe it just didn't come across that way." He wrote back and he said, "Man, if that's the way it came across, I'm very sorry. I'll go apologize to Edgar right now." He said, "We a week ago, I saw him in the parking lot and made a similar comment, and we both laughed about it, and I thought he took it okay. So he was open to my suggestion. I was able to talk in a non-abrasive manner so that he could then see my perspective, but at the same time be able to save face and not feel like he was being attacked. He hasn't made any more comments about Edgar's tie either, which is good. Okay, so that's the first. That covers skills for the first behavior, separating the people from the problem. The second key behavior that we can use to drastically improve our relationships, our communication, is to negotiate based on the underlying interests. The interests are the reasons behind why we make particular decisions. The positions that we take are the decisions that we actually make. Most negotiation is done based on positions. The Bible says, it was our scripture reading for today, Philippians 2, verse 4, do not merely look out for your own personal interests, but also for the interests of others. This doesn't mean that we just on a whim go and make sure everybody gets everything they ask of us, but that we look below the surface. We try to get down to the reasons that are driving the positions that they're taking, and then we'll be in a better position to meet their interests, their underlying interests. To illustrate this concept, the story is told of two girls who were fighting over an orange. Finally, they took the orange, cut it in half. One girl took her half of the orange, peeled it, and ate the fruit. The other girl took her half of the orange, peeled it, threw the fruit away, took the orange peel, and made a cake with it. Both of these girls could have had 100% of what they wanted if they had gone below the position to back down to the underlying interests. One girl was hungry. She wanted an orange to eat. The other girl wanted to bake the cake. She could have had all the peel. The other girl could have had all the fruit. The first skill in dealing with underlying interests is to identify them. We've got to figure out what these interests are. We can ask, why does this person want what they want? Why do they not want what I want? What are their choices? We can realize that both sides have multiple underlying interests. There's usually not one thing. Differing interests aren't bad. How many of you went to the grocery store this week and got food? Probably better than half of us. When you went into the grocery store, you were more interested in food than you were in money. Now, the grocery store, on the other hand, was more interested in money than they were in food. And so it made agreement possible. When we disagree with other people, it's not always bad. Disagreement or differing underlying interests can actually facilitate agreement. The fourth thing to remember in identifying the interests is that the most powerful interests are basic human needs. Things like economic well-being, a sense of control over one's life, recognition, security. When Amy and I were first studying this, we were able to solve an 8-year-long disagreement between us. I wanted to move to Colorado or Montana. Amy wanted to stay in the Southeast. And it seemed like no matter how much we tried to work this thing out, we never could come to agreement. Because how can you live in Colorado or the Southeast at the same time? But then when we started studying this concept of negotiating based on the underlying interest, I started asking, why does she want to live in the Southeast? Well, it was because most of her family was there, and she wanted to spend time with her family. Also, the Southeast was familiar, and there were a number of other minor, lesser interests. Then I started asking, why do I want to move to Colorado or Montana? Well, it's because I enjoyed, at the time, I enjoyed rock climbing, and I wanted to have easy access to go climbing, spend time outdoors doing fun activities as a family. And ultimately, I realized my biggest underlying interest was time. Time. Time to spend with God outdoors, time to spend, like I mentioned, with my family outdoors. It wasn't that I really needed to live in Colorado. Okay, so we asked why. Why not? We identified multiple underlying interests and our most important underlying interests. And both of these interests were actually right along in lines with those basic human needs, a sense of control over one's life, you know, rather than just following in the footsteps of my parents and living in the Southeast. I wanted to be able to move out somewhere and kind of get away from the Southeast, have that sense of control. Or Amy, for her, it was that sense of belonging with the family. When we realized these things, then we started doing the second skill, inventing options for mutual gain. When you invent options for mutual gain, you brainstorm lots of different things, not just one particular option. You get multiple options out on the table, and then you can start whittling them down. There is a danger that we consider that there's only a fixed pie. What I mean by that is, if you have a pie and you cut it in 8 pieces, if you get 5 pieces, that means I only get 3. Or if I get 6 pieces, you only get 2. This idea of inventing options for mutual gain, let's make a bigger pie so that we can all have as much pie as we want. For Amy and me, we started thinking, well, what can we do to solve this situation? How can I help her solve this problem of time with her family? And we realized, well, one option is we could stay in the Southeast, and I could have time to get out and do the things that I enjoy doing. If I were to start up a business of my own and do it right so that I could have, you know, maybe 30 hours of work every week instead of 40 hours of work. I had something to learn about being self-employed, but that's a different story. But we also realized, well, we don't have to stay in the Southeast for Amy's underlying interest to be met, time with family, as long as we can set aside money in the budget in order to make sure that we can travel back on a regular basis to visit family. Interestingly, we tried both of those options. And that's actually what we do now here in California. We make sure that Amy can get back and visit family on a regular basis. By inventing these options for mutual gain, we were able to stop fighting with one another and come up with positive solutions for our problems. I want to challenge each of us to try these skills out, practice them. This isn't high theological theory. I think we're all convinced that we need to love one another. But we just need some practical tools to help us get to where we're trying to go. It's one thing to hear these things in church. It's a whole other thing to apply them. So try practicing them. We all, almost all of us, live in families of one sort or another. If we don't have family, we have friends. And we have these interactions. There's plenty of opportunity to practice these skills. See if in the next week you can get aside with a loved one and take on some sort of contentious issue. Maybe don't try the really hard ones at first, but try some contentious issue that's been a problem between you and see if you can practice some of these skills. You have the handout, you've got the skills there in front of you, and if you can try them out, then you'll learn them a whole lot better than just hearing them. I hope these have given us some tools this morning to deal with conflict in a healthier manner. It's been a great benefit for Amy and me, not that we have arrived, we're still practicing all of these things, but it's been a great benefit to our relationship over the last few years, and I hope it'll be a benefit to you as well. Let's close with a word of prayer. Our Father in heaven, thank you for our families. Thank you for these special people in our lives. I pray that you will help us to be always on the lookout for ways to treat one another better, more kindly. Give us the courage to take on these difficult conversations and do it in a manner that separates the people from the problem, where we get to the underlying interests, and follow your counsel to listen to other people and to make sure their underlying interests are met. Thank you for giving us the power and the ability to actually carry this out. We love you. In Jesus' name, amen.